Okay, so another talk, and for today's talk, I am going to start talking about insight and how insight develops and how you use insight on all parts of the path, how Samatha and Vipassana always travel together. And it's good to know this because as you are meditating, you do come across those problems, and I was talking about how to deal with some of those problems yesterday. But you may have noticed that the way to deal with problems is just seeing things in a slightly different way, not using willpower, not just banging your head against the brick wall, but just standing back and understanding what's going on, why is there a problem? And this is where we use insight. And the first development of insight, of understanding, is seeing why you can't get peaceful in meditation. What's the big problem with letting go? Why can't we just do nothing? And one of the reasons why we can't do nothing is because we feel guilty when we do nothing. In fact, doing nothing has been brainwashed into you to be something which is irresponsible, lazy. Everybody else in the world is working hard, so you should as well. And doing nothing is one of the worst things you could possibly do. Even when I was growing up, they told me the devil makes work for idle hands. That was crazy. The devil makes work for active hands, not for idle ones. And so it's very, very hard to have the guts to absolutely be irresponsible and do nothing and then just enjoy the day, rather than having all these goals and things I would have to achieve today. And so that's why it's very good for you to have every now and again a doing nothing day. A day you put aside for doing absolutely nothing at all, being totally irresponsible, being like you were when you were a kid and learning the art of doing nothing. And it is such an important thing to do in Buddhist meditation. But there is another joke which I like telling on every retreat. I know some of you keep coming back every retreat, but this is your fault. You know what to expect. And that is the lovely story of the fellow who called up the monastery and asked, "Monk, I need you to come and do some chanting at my house." And the monk said, "Sorry, I'm busy today." And the caller said, "What are you doing?" And the monk said, "I'm doing nothing." That's what monks are supposed to do, okay? And the guy thought, he was smart enough as a Buddhist. He said, "Okay, fair enough, you know, please carry on doing nothing." And so he called the monk again the next day. "Remember me, I called yesterday. I need you to come and do a blessing of my house." And the monk said, "I'm busy. What are you doing?" "Nothing." "But that's what you're doing yesterday." "Yes," said the monk, "but I'm not finished yet." And that is a very good Buddhist joke. It shows that Buddhism is getting understood in our culture. So, why is it so difficult to do nothing and to relax and allow the mind to become peaceful and still? So, this is where we develop our insight. Why is it it's hard to do nothing? Number one, guilt. Because we've been brainwashed into us, we're always supposed to be doing something to make ourselves worthwhile. So number one, remember, we don't do guilt in Buddhism. This is a guilt-free religion. Oh, what bliss. We don't do guilt at all. That's one of the amazing things when I first started understanding Buddhism and started reading it, practicing, learning from such teachers like Ajahn Chah. Hey, where's the guilt? Aren't you going to say there's something wrong with me? You're going to say that somehow or other that, you know, I wasn't formed correctly and I'm hopeless and I can't get enlightened and I can't get this and I can't get that. Are you sure there's nothing wrong with me? Yeah, nothing wrong with you at all. And that was a great insight to realize there's nothing fundamentally wrong with you. Ooh, that's liberating. And to realize, yeah, we all make mistakes, but we learn from those mistakes and that's all there is to it. So that meant I never needed to feel guilty anymore. And that took away so much suffering in life. Because all the time when you were growing up, especially in the West, you were always doing something wrong. I never quite figured out what it was. But I had to be doing something wrong. And after all, if I was right, they were wrong, I was doing nothing wrong at all, I was just being me. So that way, no guilt. So when you have no guilt, it's okay to do nothing. And the second reason, if you really understand and get insight, why is it that, you know, we find it so difficult to do nothing? And it is because our sense of ego and self, it really challenges us to learn how to be, do nothing, to actually not achieve anything in one day. Because that really goes against our concept and idea of who we think we are, our sense of self and our ego. Because you find that your sense of self and ego has been built up over the years by all your achievements. I thought I had a great ego when I finished a great university like Cambridge. People said, how clever you are. Oh, what a wonderful person you are. And then I really got taken down to size when I went to Thailand. And there was people like Ajahn Chah, only 4 years at school. And I had to admit, he was far smarter than I was. You know, you thought you were intelligent, but you realized you were totally stupid compared to some of these great monks. And what you realize, it took your ego down. And remember, what is your sense of self? It's all those things you've achieved in your life. That's how you define yourself. So to have a day doing absolutely nothing challenges fundamentally who you think you are and what your purpose is in life. People always go into their life wanting to do something, achieve something. If it's not for themselves, to help the whole world. And now for one day, you're not going to do absolutely anything. Not helping others, not helping yourself. A day of doing nothing. Why is that so difficult? It's fascinating. So whenever we want to develop insight, we ask these interesting questions. Don't go developing insight on the nature of jhanas or the nature of enlightenment, whether there's a self after enlightenment or what goes on. That's just too much thinking. Get the really interesting questions. Like, why can't we let go? Why is it so difficult to take a cup and just put it down and leave it alone? Now you're actually seeing just the way the sense of self actually works. You find out most of the time it's because you get involved. That's why you always stuff things up in life. You just let yourself go and let things be. You find out life goes very simply and very easy. There's that lovely piece of research which was done, and I always quote this. It was done in Jerusalem when the doctors went on strike. I know there's a couple of doctors here. Doctors went on strike for 2 or 3 weeks. And during that time, the research came out from the hospitals where they went on strike. The death rate in all those hospitals plummeted when the doctors weren't working. So much for doctors. So they were health hazard doctors. Why did that happen? Because a lot of times you just leave things alone, just care for people, sort of all these interventions and tests, and we give you another test and another test and another test. That really kills people, all those tests. So that's why in Cambridge even, they had used to have really good graffiti in those days. You know, not just squiggles, which you didn't understand what they meant. They were really witty. And it was one of the graffiti they had on the wall was, exams kill by degrees. It was very clever. It was true. The other one we had over there, which was, it was on the wall, and I saw it, and now you actually see this on greetings cards, but certainly in 1970 it was on the wall of the philosophy department at Cambridge University. And it was started off by quoting René Descartes, the great French philosopher, which was, to do is to be. And underneath was the more modern French philosopher, Jean-Paul Sartre. He turned it around. Instead of saying to do is to be, he said to be is to do. And the existentialist philosopher. And underneath that, somebody had written an even more modern adaptation of that from the very famous modern American philosopher. Dooby dooby doo, Frank Sinatra. No was really good graffiti in those days. You know, you read that and you remember that, and it was witty, it was clever, and it had a meaning as well. And the reason I quoted that is because you can see, you know, this insight. Can you see the connection between doing and being? And this, now the great philosophers have all seen this, that to be someone, you have to do something. That's who you are. And if you do nothing, the idea of letting go is for you disappearing. Bye-bye me. I'm not quite sure who I am when I don't do anything. When I'm not doing doctoring, you know, who am I? When I'm not meditating, you know, doing meditation, you know, who am I? When I'm not cooking, cleaning, planning, you know, I'm not managing something, who am I? I'm not a manager anymore. It really takes you out of your comfort zone of who you think you are. That is why it's so difficult to let go. Which is why a few people, I've taught them in the interview, that if you have a difficulty doing nothing, just start to contemplate who the heck do we think you are. Do a little bit of non-self contemplation. And it's great being a monk, because being a monk, you can be anybody and nobody. You're like a chameleon as a monk. Now you can always change. You can actually be the builder. And to show you what I mean by being a chameleon, is one of my classic stories. A few years ago, and I still do building work, you know, the teacher's cottage in which I'm sleeping now, that I built that one. And you can see me on the photos on the roof, fixing up the roof at the very end. That was only last year. So I still do lots of building work. And amazing, just when I got on top of the roof never collapsed. Because I really build it tough. Anyhow, let's even know your idea of who you are. You know, sometimes people think I'm fat. I am not fat. I found out my problem. I was reading in the books and I found out I know exactly my medical condition. And it's called anorexia. It is. It's called anorexia because I looked in the dictionary. You know what they describe anorexia as? You look in the mirror and you think you're fat. And that's me precisely. Every time I look in the mirror, I think I'm fat, so it must be anorexia. So I need to eat more, please. I need to eat more. So I'm gonna... It's just an illusion, okay? So I just know, who are you anyway? So you go back to sort of looking at this idea of who you think you are, and you start to let that one go. And so as a monk, you're a chameleon. You can be whatever you like. So going back to that story, we were helping just mix up some concrete for one of the ceilings in one of the huts. Mixing. And I love concrete. Now I'm a boy, okay, I'm a male. You know, get into some all dirty and messy, get this concrete splashed all over you. And so I was going back from the building site to my for a shower. And a splatter with grey all over you, and on your robes, and look a real mess. You know, more like a sort of a labourer on a building site than, you know, a famous monk. And as I was going past the main hall to my hut, I saw a Sri Lankan lady. Very high class Sri Lankan. You know when they're high class Sri Lankan ladies? Because they have so many bangles that they sound like an ice cream truck coming to the monastery. You should anger girls, you know what I mean? That if dingle, 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 oh, the ice cream truck has come. And so, you know, we just happened to pass. And she said, oh, I'm looking for Ajahn Brahm. Where's Ajahn Brahm? Now, I'm a smart monk. I can think on my feet. And I knew I'd be in trouble if I said I was Ajahn Brahm, looking like I did. So I said, look, he'd probably be down in the dining room in about 10 minutes. So if you go up there, you can meet him over there. And yet it worked. It's amazing. Just all I did was shower and change my robes. And I went down there and spoke to her about 10 or 15 minutes, talking about Buddhism, meditation and stuff. And after, he said, "Oh, it's wonderful. You really are a very, very good monk. And it's a very beautiful monastery." But, she said, "If you don't mind me saying, that on the way up here, I saw one of your monks, and he was very badly dressed. That's not a good image for Buddhism. And, you know, you should do something about that, because that's not what people get inspired by." She didn't realize it was me. Absolutely not. And I told her, I said, "Oh, madam, okay, thank you so much. I will talk to that monk later." And I did lie. I talk to myself all the time. So that's a true story. And just, now, how could, you know, which one is a real Ajahn Brahm? I don't know. So you can have fun when you have no sense of self. You can do whatever you like and be whatever you like and just enjoy all the different things which you get up to as a monk in today's world. It's fascinating being a monk in today's world. And you go and have these debates like last week with the top Zen masters on TV, live TV. Now, that's really cool. Or you... What else do I get up to? Oh yeah, state dinner with Queen Elizabeth, that was really fun. And then you go into the autopsies and just stand by dead bodies and poke them around. Like I did once in... This is another true story, I'm just anecdotes now. You know, I went to one of my first autopsies I went to was in Thailand, in Sirirat Hospital, the big hospital on the other side of the river from Bangkok. And, you know, because you're a monk, you can walk in anywhere. It's really good fun. And when I went into the autopsy room, you know, I saw, you know, there's high windows, don't have low windows, you know, because don't want people looking in, but to let some light in. And I couldn't believe, you know, what you saw on the shelf. You know, usually you expect a pot plant. It wasn't a pot plant. It was a human head, severed at the neck, on a plate, where you'd expect a pot plant. So I went up there and poked it a bit. Yeah, it was a real head. Now that's cool. That's awesome. And that was in this hospital. If anyone else sees that sort of thing, they'll freak out. But monks, we're really weird. So we just think it's terribly cool. So all get to do all sorts of interesting stuff as a monk, but you can be whatever you like because you've got no hard sense of self. And it also means when you meditate, you can totally disappear. Totally disappear and be absolutely no one. That means you can let go. How many responsibilities and duties do you have? Why can't you let them go? I probably got more responsibilities than any of you. What am I? Okay. I am the abbot of Bodhinyana Monastery over the road. I basically just look after Jhana Grove as well. And I'm the main fundraiser for Dhammasara Nuns Monastery and fix up any problems when you girls go crazy. Which happens every now and again. I'm also the spiritual director of Santi Forest Monastery because that's over in Sydney because Ajahn Sujato, he left me holding the baby. And I'm also the spiritual, what else am I? Oh yeah, the spiritual patron of the Buddhist Fellowship in Singapore. It's about 3,000 or 4,000 people, a huge organization. And they've also got the Brahm Education Center where I'm a director as well in Singapore. There's also apparently the Brahm Society in Colombo, which I'm supposed to be involved in. Where am I? The Buddhist Fellowship in Indonesia, which I'm supposed to be the spiritual patron. A few other things, I forgot. BSV. That's right, because he's in the BSV as well. I'm supposed to be the spiritual advisor for the Buddhist Society of Victoria, so I have to keeping this guy in line and all the other monks and nuns, because they want to build a new place over there. Oh yeah, the chairperson of the Australian Sangha Association, which runs all the Buddhist monks and nuns in Australia. What else is it? I don't know, I forget. But who cares? So you've got all these responsibilities and duties I'm supposed to be doing. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Oh, sorry. The spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of West Australia. There's a couple of committee members here. I'm going to get in trouble. Sorry? Oh yeah, the whole world. And Mars and Venus as well.
Very popular
to aliens. And so I've got all this responsibility. So what do I do when I meditate? Bye bye. I'm gonna just have a nice quiet time. So it's important I never bring any of those responsibilities into my meditation with me. Meditation is a sacred area. Just like before you come into this room, you have to leave your shoes outside. Did anyone tell you why in Buddhist tradition you can't bring your shoes inside the temple? You know why? Because I'm not the only monk who tells bad jokes. That's to stop you having anything to throw at me. No, that's not the reason why we leave the shoes outside. No, just obviously for cleanliness. But it gives you an idea of like leaving things outside before you come into the Dhamma hall. This is sacred space. So please, you learn from insight not to bring all of who you think you are into meditation with you. Don't bring your work. That's not who you are when you meditate. Don't bring your family into meditation. That's not who you are. Don't bring your past nor your future inside. They have to be left outside the hall with your shoes and your bags and all this other stuff. So you don't carry these things in. Which means that when you come inside the hall, who are you? You are not the accountant. You're not the doctor. You are not the wife. You're not the husband. You're not the mother. You're not the monk. You're not the nun. You're not the caretaker. You're no one. All of that is what you do outside. Inside, you're nothing at all. Which means you're perfectly free to do nothing and just to be. Otherwise, when you take responsibilities with you wherever you go, you never have any peace at all in your life. I'm only a temporary abbot, a temporary spiritual director, a temporary spiritual patron. I'm only temporary, that's all. When I'm there in the monastery, then I do the work. When I'm in meditation, that's not who I am. If you can develop the insight into non-self, you aren't these things. It makes it so easy to let go. You don't have to think about all this family stuff or Buddhist society stuff or jhana growth stuff. You don't have to think of it because it's not my responsibility. Now you are, as I said the other day, a visitor, not an owner. What a wonderful thing it is to be a visitor and not an owner, with no responsibility at all. Then you can just let go and just be. So ask yourself, you have a difficult time letting go. Why? What about all these thoughts which keep running in your mind? Don't just try and stop them. Just ask why. Why do I always get involved in these thoughts? And again, one of the things is you think they're my thoughts, and therefore they're important to you. And the other thing is you're afraid of having no thoughts, because again, you go outside your comfort zone. So one great insight which will help you not getting caught up in your thinking is a simile of the movie theatre. I used to go to the movies with my friends and girlfriends when I was young. And I remember many times sitting with your girlfriend and just watching some movie. And when it got sad, she would cry. When it got scary, and not my girlfriend, but somebody else would shout out, "Hey, behind you, look!" Did that happen to you when you went to the movies as well? Some idiot who's sitting in the movie theatre shouting at the screen, "It's a screen, they can't hear you!" But why do you do that? It's because you get so engrossed in the movie. For you, it's real. And that's why you care about the guys and this monster's about to jump on him. "Hey, behind you, look. Don't do it. Don't go through. Don't answer the phone." Yeah, because you get involved in it. And I always remember the movie, The West Side Story, the movie, for those of you old enough to remember that. Just this doomed love affair between Tony and Maria. And I forget what was happening. I think Maria's brother was trying to kill Tony or something, and she was trying to warn him, and they were going through the streets of the Bronx or somewhere. and he had a gun and she was trying to stop him, and finally she saw him and shouted out, "Tony, Tony!" And that's when the gun went off and Tony got shot. And under the street lights in the sort of the poor part of New York, Maria ran to him and held the love of her life in her arms as she passed away. And somewhere in the Bronx there was an orchestra, and they sang as they died, "There's a place for us somewhere, a place for us." And my girlfriend was crying her eyes out. She was weeping. I said, "You stupid girl, it's only a movie. He's going to be alive on the next performance."
You're insensitive, right? Now, when I first told that story at Nolomo years ago, you wouldn't believe how many complaints I got from women. "You insensitive monk." Laughing at your... Why do you get involved like that? Because you like getting involved, don't you? You like having a good cry. You like being excited. You like getting afraid. That's what you go to the movies for. You know, to get safe emotional extremes. So you get really afraid and you know you're going to be okay afterwards. You can fall in love and you get out of love again. It's okay afterwards. It's only a movie. So why do we think so much? Because we like thinking. Why do you get afraid so much? Because you like getting afraid. Why do you get emotional so much? Because you love getting emotional and sad. And this is our addiction. We're afraid of anything else. And so somehow or other, we have to trick you just to see that these are just like the play of a movie on the screen of your mind. And if you really want to stop your thinking, have the insight that here you're sitting here in a quiet, safe place, and all these thoughts are just like so many rubbish movies playing out on a screen in front of you. Usually they're old reruns of movies you've seen hundreds of times. And here they go again in front of you. If you can only remember that you are separated from the movie, there's a distance, a space between you and what you're watching. It's very, very easy to let go of those thoughts. If you get enmeshed in them, then my thoughts, just like the movie, you get caught up in the movie. You get excited, afraid, emotional, because you've got enmeshed in what is just stray thoughts going on in your mind. Old memories, fantasies, dreams, it's not real. No more real than a movie is. If you can remember that, you can let go of those thoughts and be very peaceful. You're taking away their emotional importance and value. So this is where we use the insights in meditation to actually to see these things. And my goodness, it works much more powerfully than any type of will or trying to control. The big problem with people meditating, they use too much will and force. I'm going to stop my thinking. Stop, 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 stop. And of course it never works, you just get tense. Or you try and find some way of dealing with it. Use insight. Understand, why do I think so much? Why can't I just be quiet and be still? The next thing which happens, especially with stillness, is for you to start to appreciate and feel safe within the stillness. That's why we have a quiet place. You can walk around. There's hardly anything going on. And after a few days, you feel perfectly safe here. You know, sometimes people come from town, and when they come to a quiet place, I noticed this years ago, they start to raise their voice. Or they start to turn on sort of radios or iPods. And I wondered, why do you have to disturb the silence? Because the silence was very challenging. And they felt very uncomfortable in silence. We're used to noise. And I found it disgusting that wherever you go in town, or even in airports, there's always sound. There is a meditation room, or prayer room in Perth Airport, as there are meditation and prayer rooms in many places. And I went in there once and once only. I thought, I can just do a little bit of meditation before the flight takes off. And as soon as you've got in there, please do not leave your baggage unattended. If your baggage is unattended, it will be taken away. Paging Mr. Smith, your flight is leaving now. Please go immediately to the... Please do not leave your parked cars parked unattended outside. They'll be towed away. It was just so noisy in the meditation room. So I didn't stay there very long. And I remember also in London, if ever you were very busy, you know, doing some business in town, I'd always love finding a church or a cathedral or somewhere. You can just go in there and sit quietly. And the last time I did that, I think maybe a few months before I came to Thailand, it was in Westminster Abbey. I used to love that church. It was right in the middle of London, in Westminster. You go in there and sit quietly. It's a huge place, and just be silent and rest. You know, from the busyness of, you know, doing shopping or work or something in London. The last time I went in there, I was just so disappointed. They had installed a PA system. This was in 1970-something. And they had advertisements, announcements, and when there was nothing going on, they had a sermon being delivered. And I thought, that is sacrilege. The whole purpose of those great buildings was to encapsulate and celebrate silence and peace. Instead of having silence and peace, they were having lectures about how to find silence and how to find peace. Totally destroying what they were talking about. I never went in after that. So isn't it terrible that we don't value silence in our modern world? So much so that when you're here and there's nothing to say, nothing to do, it's so difficult just to be silent between your ears. So don't try and force it. Get insight, understand why is it we don't value silence. Sometimes all it is, we're not used to it. It's something we've lost in our modern culture. So my job and your job is to help me here, is to notice silence. That's why I taught the Namo Buddhaya, you know, to see the spaces between the syllables and to get to note silence. And you get the insight into the meaning of silence and also its happiness and joy. You feel so free when not a thought is going on in your mind. And you're just happy just being. You find it is so much more delightful than all this thinking. And what it does then, you have the insight which changes your value system. Instead of always valuing thinking and understanding or having the opinion that being a great thinker is going to solve all your problems in life. Instead of being a thinker, you're a silent sage. And you'll find something, the insight will come to you, that you solve more problems by being silent than you ever do by thinking about them. Just the same as the well-known experience when you try to remember somebody's name and you can't remember them, the more you try and think about it, the more it's going to escape you. But when you stop thinking about it and are silent, the name just pops up. You remember them. Through silence, not through thinking. Now, you've all had that experience. That happens to me so much because I meet so many of you internationally going traveling all around the world, and then somebody comes and says, I was on a retreat with you 5 years ago. Do you remember me? Oh, come on. So, instead of trying to upset people and say, no, I don't know who you are. You know, how can I? You know, thousands of people have been on retreat with me in 5 years. Why should I remember you? That would really upset somebody. So I said, oh, yes, yes, I remember you. You're the one whose name I keep forgetting. That's a nice trick, you know, because they think, oh, I'm special. So anyway... So, you know that silence is actually where you get a lot of insight from. It was, Ron knows this, it was his ex-partner, Ronnie Nutt, when she came on a retreat many years ago. And she was a top, very senior social worker, and I remember coming on the retreat really late. This was the old retreats in North Perth, Redemptorist Monastery. We used to hire that place. And she came on the retreat late one evening because she was just in her office tying up the loose ends. She said she didn't manage to tie up all the loose ends, but what the hell? She just left and came onto the retreat. And she was a good meditator. 4 or 5 days later, she came to me in the interview and she said, "This was amazing. I had all these problems in the office, decisions I had to make. And I said, I'm going to be irresponsible, I'm going to forget about everything, I need a break, I'm just going to meditate." And so for 4 or 5 days, she didn't even think about all that responsibility and work at all. She just meditated, rested, meditated. And she was meditating one afternoon, really peaceful, and all these solutions, they just bubbled up. And when she noticed the solutions, they were amazing solutions, really, insightful ones. And she went back to her room, wrote them all down, and they said, "Okay, when I go back to work, I'll put them into action." And she said that she would never be able to think such solutions out. They came out of the silence, and they were brilliant solutions. And so I say that story, and there's many other stories like it. If you do have any problems in your life, things which are really bugging you, for goodness sake, stop thinking about them. It just don't get anywhere that way. Let them go, be silent, and you'll find then the answers come up, and they're really good solutions, innovative ones. Wisdom comes out of silence, not out of thinking. That's why we have too many stupid people in this world, because they think too much and they don't know how to shut up. So, don't be one of those stupid people always thinking. And get the insight, the understanding that when you're silent, that's when you see, that's when you know, that's when your senses become sharp. And if you can see that, you will give far more value in your life to silence than you ever give to thinking. And when it comes to the real big insights, the meaning of life, just how many people think their way to the meaning of life, and they always end up starting a new religion, fighting each other, destroying the planet in the meantime, and arguing that, what the meaning of God is. For goodness sake, why don't they all shut up and be silent? Wouldn't it be wonderful if all the Taliban just sat down in meditation retreat and were silent? All the troubles of mankind, said Louis Pascal, come from not knowing how to sit still. What a beautiful statement that was. Come from not knowing how to sit still. So here we have the insight and knowledge of how to sit still, and you'll find 99% of your problems in life will all vanish. The insight into the power and the wisdom born of stillness. See if you can find that out. So these are insights, understandings based on experience. That's why all the thinking which goes on, it just basically goes round and round and gets you nowhere. Silence is where insight comes from. Which is why at the beginning of this retreat, I gave the simile of the lake. All of your thoughts, all of your doing, just creates more waves on the surface of the lake. And if you go down by that lake in the evening to try and see a reflection of the moon and the stars, if there is some waves on that lake, you get distorted image. That's like thoughts on your mind just distort the truth. You can't see what's really there. It's just a distortion of truth. That's why you can't really rely on all this thinking. But when that lake is perfectly still, like a mind without a thought going through it, perfectly at peace, then it can understand. Then you have a perfect reflection of the moon and the stars. No waves, no distortion. No thoughts, still mind, far closer to truth. That's called the way of insight. Seeing clearly. And the other thing about insight, which, you know, I've been pushing in a talk of 2 or 3 days ago, is that when you do become still, you get more energy, more power to your mindfulness. You get insight into the nature of a piece of shit. It's much more beautiful than you ever expected. You've only been taught it's stinky. That's just our conditioning. We've been brainwashed into that. Actually, it's quite stinky. But don't always believe you're brainwashing. And you have the floor is beautiful. The sky, the leaves are beautiful. You start to get insight into where beauty truly lies. And also, where happiness is. We spend our whole life searching for happiness. How many of you ever find true happiness? If you want to have the insight into happiness, it's my favorite story of the old donkey and the carrot. And this is a good story because it's accurate to your life. You can understand it so easily. Sometimes people give very profound teachings. So profound that no one understands them. And if you don't understand them, it must be very profound. Have you ever had that? Somebody says something, and wow, that is just so much gobbledygook, it must be deep. That's what I was getting from these Zen masters in Korea. I mean, absolutely nonsense, no sense at all. But it's supposed to be deep. It wasn't deep, it was nonsense. So please don't confuse nonsense with profound teachings. That's why you try and keep it down to earth so everyone can understand it. But please be careful. Just because you can understand what I say, don't think, oh, this is just ordinary Buddhism. You want something more profound. In other words, something you can't understand. If you want something you can't understand, don't come here. So the story of the donkey and the carrot. Donkeys are stubborn. You can beat them and they still won't do what you say. Just like meditators, even if I did use a stick, you still wouldn't do what I say. So, we use tricks. Psychology. So for the donkey, you don't hit the donkey with a stick, you tie the stick to the donkey's back. So the front of the stick is 2 foot in front of the donkey's head. On the end of the stick you put a string, on the end of the string a carrot. And donkeys love carrots. So you put the carrot in front of the donkey. And the carrot loves not the carrot loves the donkey loves the carrot. I knew I was saying something wrong there. So the donkey loves the carrot, so what does the donkey do? It goes towards the carrot. And because the donkey moves, the stick moves, the string moves, the carrot moves. So the carrot's always 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. Does that ring any bells for you about your life? Happiness, fulfillment, the perfect relationship, the perfect job, the perfect meditation, the perfect whatever. It's always a little bit in front of you. You can see it. It's within reach. And you go for it, and it goes further away from you. Whether it's the perfect job, the perfect partner in life, the perfect meditation, the perfect teacher, the perfect food, it's almost there. That's why you get tricked into going a bit forward. And whatever it is you're chasing, always goes in front of you as well. You never quite catch it. It's like chasing the rainbow. You can see it's over there. When you go over there, the rainbow's moved. Welcome to your life. So, how do you catch the carrot? How do you catch happiness? That's what happiness is like. It's right in front of you. You can see it. It's almost within reach, happiness. But you never quite catch it. But there is a way of catching happiness. The same way the donkey catches the carrot. It's very easy when you understand. Just like meditation, just like happiness, like life. Once you understand, it's the easiest thing in the world to be happy. So what does the donkey do? The donkey's been running after the carrot all its life. But then the donkey reads Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond by Ajahn Brahm.
Or it listens to a tape, a CD, or YouTube, or whatever.
And the donkey understands. The donkey stops and does nothing. Just stands there, lets things be, doesn't do anything, just stops. And what happens to the carrot when you stop? It swings further away. Momentum. But soon the carrot is 4 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, twice as far as it's ever been before. And that's what happens when you let go in meditation. Your mind goes more sleepy, more crazy than it's ever done before. That's what happens. When I put down the cup, I'm holding it still as I possibly could, but I can't get full stillness. When I put it down, it moves more. As soon as you let go, you do create more restlessness, more tiredness. Par for the course. Leave it alone. Because after that carrot has gone 4 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, it stops and starts coming towards the donkey. Soon it's 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth and travelling at great speed towards the donkey. The first time that's ever happened. And all the donkey needs to do, remember the importance of compassion. That's why we've got the teddy bears. See, they're very attentive, aren't you? Yes, I am attentive. Very good. What does the donkey do? At the last moment, just as the carrot is coming close to the donkey's mouth, the donkey remembers, the door of my mouth is open to you, carrot. And the carrot comes in. That is how the donkey catches the carrot every time. It's obvious when you hear it. You've been running after things, stop. Carrot goes away, comes back straight into your mouth. Such a simple way of catching carrots. And such a simple way of finding happiness. You get the insight into how you are happy. Stop chasing after happiness. Stop chasing after attainments. Stop trying to get nimittas or jhanas. Stop chasing after all those different carrots you have in life. Stop. And those things will go further away from you. Be patient. Wait. You know what's going to happen. Then they start coming to you. Then all these beautiful things come in to your mind. That is how you get jhanas. Nimittas, the whole works. Not by chasing after them. Chase after them, they're always 2 foot in front of you. You get the insight into letting go. And my goodness, once you figure that one out, meditation is the easiest thing in the world. You don't have to do nothing. Stop, sit here, and all these beautiful carrots keep coming into your mouth, and you don't do anything. You just sit there and they happen to you. Just like my favorite airline, Buddha Air. On Buddha Air, all you do, once you got on board, you do nothing. You just sit in your seat. And when you're sitting on your seat, this flight attendant comes up and says, "Sir, do you want a limiter?" "Yeah, okay, thanks a lot." "What limiter do you want? The blue limiter, the gold limiter, the white limiter?" "Actually, last time I had the blue limiter. I'm trying to try the gold limiter today." "Very good." You get this beautiful gold limiter, incredibly bright. And a minute or two later, you're still sort of enjoying your limiter. And the flight attendant comes up. "Do you want first jhana? We've got first jhana on the tray today." I said, "Okay, yeah, I'll take some of that. Thank you very much." And you're served first jhana. "Oh, this is really nice." And later on in the flight, they come along with second, third and fourth jhana. And then just before they land, they come along and say, "Do you want stream winning? Special offer on this flight, stream winning." So now I had that last time. "I'll have once return, please." And then they come along with the arahat, full enlightenment. "Yeah, thank you very much." You just sit in your seat, it just comes to you. And then because it's special promotion this month only, psychic powers, levitation. "Yeah, well, no. Oh, okay, I'll have some mind reading, that'd be interesting."
It all comes to you. Which reminds me of the story of the guy who went on the aircraft sitting next to a parrot. Another bad joke. Watch out. So, come on, they like these jokes. So I was sitting next to a parrot, and the flight attendant comes up, and the guy says, "Now, can I have a cup of coffee, please?" And the parrot says, "And give me a whiskey, you bitch." And the flight attendant is shocked being called a bitch by one of the passengers, but you know, passengers are always right, so she goes off to the galley, and because she was a bit so shocked, she comes back with the whiskey, she forgets the coffee. And so the guy says again, "Madam, can I please have a cup of coffee?" And by that time, the parrot has downed the whiskey and says, "And bring me another whiskey, you cow." And that's really, really sort of, you know, very bad speech. But the flight attendant goes back, and because she's a bit sort of confused, she comes back with another whiskey. She's forgotten the coffee again. And so the guy thinks, well, the only way to get a coffee around here or anything is use the parrot method. So he looks at the flight attendant and says, "Get me that coffee, you pig." And the flight attendant goes away and comes back with two big male flight attendants who pick both of them out of their seats, open the emergency exit and throw them out at 30,000 feet. And as the guy and the parrot are tumbling down, the parrot turns around to the guy and said, "You really do have bad speech for someone who can't fly." I read that in Air Asia magazine. Very good. They have good in-flight entertainment in the magazine. So anyway, on Buddha Day, you don't get... Okay, you can open your ears now. This is dumb enough. On Buddha Air, things come to you. Or as Ajahn Chah would say, and this was one of his great, great, great sayings, to show that, you know, what I'm saying now about insight, this is insight into how jhana enlightenment works. If you get this understanding, insight, it makes it so easy. That was his famous saying. I'm the only one who's repeated this. I don't know why other people haven't remembered this, but I got this the very first year I was in Wat Pa Pong, in 1974, I think it was. 74, 75, can't remember which, but around that time. He said his monastery was a mango orchard. And all the mango trees have been planted by the Buddha 2,500 years ago. So straight away I realized this was another simile. And he said, now the mangoes are ripe, thousands of them on every tree. And you monks are so lucky. You don't have to climb the tree to get the mango. You don't have to throw a stick up to get the mango. Nor do you need to shake the tree to get the mangoes to fall. All you need to do, monks, and you say nuns and lay men, lay women today, all you need to do is sit under the mango tree and open your hand and a mango will fall into it. And that was an incredible, powerful story by Ajahn Chah. At the time, I was only just newly ordained as a monk, I thought it was the talk of a crazy man. I'd seen mango trees before. Imagine sitting under a real mango tree. How long would you have to sit before a mango fell? Hours, maybe days. And if it did fall, it would be more likely to fall on the top of your head than in your hand. So what the heck did this monk mean? And of course, after... It's really weird. All these stories, the really powerful ones, you know they're important, but you just can't process them. So they actually get stored in your brain, subconsciously. You don't intend to, but they're stored there. And later on in your life, when you see the truth of that, this story comes up again, and you're in awe of these amazing teachings. So where did he find that one from? That's just so perfect. Because that's what happens. You may be struggling and with your meditation. If you're struggling with your meditation, you're shaking the mango tree, you're throwing sticks up, trying to get a nimitta,
You're climbing the trees sometimes out of desperation, trying to get even just a few minutes of watching the breath. That is not the way to get mangoes. You just sit under that tree with your hand open, with this beautiful open mind, with an open heart. And all these wonderful things fall right into you. You sit there under the Bodhi tree of the Dhamma. Keep your mind open, your heart open. The door of my heart open to whatever's happening. And all these incredible things, they just fall in. Delightful breath, incredible nimittas, amazing jhanas, the most powerful insights of enlightenment. They just fall in. And you're in awe of the wisdom of a Buddha, the understanding of an Ajahn Chah. This is how things happen. You have to do nothing. Just sit and stop shaking things. And then everything happens. That is brilliant, profound and true. So this is the insight into how these things happen. You could go into the insight into what is jhana like, what is enlightenment like, you know, what is a stream, we know once return and non-return or arahat. But all those descriptions, yeah, I might give them later on, but they're a bit of a waste of time. What you really want to know is how to experience these things for yourself. So you don't need to believe it. You don't need to sort of try and comprehend things. All you need to do is to know the way to find out for yourself. To get the insight into the path. How to be at peace. How to let go. How to do nothing. To sit under the tree and let these things happen. To stop chasing the carrot. And amazing, the carrot comes towards you. How just to be still. And all the insights, they just come out of stillness. Let the lake have no waves on the surface. And then you see the reflection. It's obvious. You can't miss it. That is the way of insight. The way of Buddhism. So, hopefully I've inspired you, and hopefully I've brainwashed you into spending the rest of the day doing absolutely nothing. Just sitting here, seeing how much you can't do. See how much you can't achieve. See how much you can just let go. Be still. And be totally indolent. So have a great day doing nothing. Sadhu. 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 Very good. So if anybody wants to borrow the teddy bear this morning, we had somebody borrowed it last night, and it's a very nice teddy bear, it even speaks to you. So you can borrow the teddy bear to do loving kindness meditation today. Or the dog as well. Poor old dog, no one's borrowed the dog. I'm sure the dog has got now an inferiority complex. Everybody likes teddy bear, but no one likes the dog. So if you want to borrow the dog, if you borrow the dog, when you meditate, you have to meditate with the dog or with the thing in your lap. It makes it amazing to how it improves your meditation. It makes you softer and not so sort of hard and demanding. So these are here to meditation aids.